then, last but not least, we have Jan Korbel, who actually is coming yet from another discipline. So now we have learned about nuclear medicine, immunity, or atherosclerosis research. But now let's go to statistical physics, complex systems, and econophysics. And so that is the field of Jan Korbel, and he's also the winner of the first prize tonight. And we are looking forward to understand what you have done. Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much. Thank you for a very nice introduction. This is a paper I've been doing with my colleagues at the at the Complexity Science Hub at the Center for Complex Systems at the Medical University. And when I actually received this prize, I was quite surprised because this is nothing about medicine. It's actually very distant, and I'm very flattered that you chose this quite distant topic for this prize. And of course, I owe you an explanation what this title means and what the work means, because there are several things that probably don't match very much with each other. So there is something called homophily. This is a term known in social psychology and social group formation. And there is a term called spin glasses. This is a term from condensed matter theory. There was 2 years ago, Giorgio Parisi won a Nobel Prize for this. And there is a term self-assembly, which refers to soft matter statistical physics. And how do all these concepts fit together? And I will now tell you a story of how we made them together and where we started. And we started with this guy, with this fellow. So everybody knows that this is Ludwig Boltzmann. And his famous result, so this is his grave, and on his gravestone, before the gravestone, it's standing me and my daughter. And on the gravestone is written this very simple formula. It has three letters and one logarithm, one function. And it's the formula for entropy. And the K is just a Boltzmann constant, so it's now called Boltzmann. It was not called that like that at his time. And there is this logarithm, and there is this magical W. And this describes basically the whole statistical physics, more or less. The W is a very simple quantity. It's called multiplicity. So it just counts how many states the system can achieve. And what we have found out is that for the case where you have a system that can form molecules, so really just particles forming molecules of size 2, 3, etc., you can find this relatively simple formula for this multiplicity. And during our study, what we have found out is that Boltzmann actually did find this this result already 140 years ago. But unfortunately for him, this paper was kind of forgotten, so nobody has cited it ever. It's still very interesting to see that these ideas were already in his mind 140 years ago. Took a little step forward. We calculated some quantities and basically used it for some applications in statistical mechanics. There is in soft matter physics, there is a particle, the nanoparticle, that's like 10 to 100 nanometers called Janus particle, and Janus is a Roman god that has two faces, and similarly this particle has two faces. One is hydrophobic and one is charged, and if the two particles that are charged face to each other, they stick together. If not, then they repel each other. And what this particle form is so-called clusters, so polymers or micelles. In general, basically they form these large clusters of particles, and our methodology helped us to understand when and how large these clusters can be. And what we found out is that there is basically two phases where you have one large cluster of the particles that are, many of them are fit together. There is something called fluid phase where they basically freely float around and do not interact very much, and there is this coexistence phase where basically you have both large clusters and small particles. And this is something that is not about social systems at all, but what we've realized actually is that there is a nice connection potentially. And basically the connection is that similarly to particles, also humans form groups. And the question is that whether we can use this theory of self-assembly to predict when people start making groups. And for this, we need a force similar to the charge in the particles. And the well-known force is called homophily. And it comes from an old English proverb, birds of a feather flock together. So basically, if we simplify a human to, let's say, a set of opinions, so, and it can be very simple, whether you like Mac or Windows, whether you drink tea or coffee, whether you are a fan of Real Madrid or Barcelona, or it can be, of course, more general, it can be about your political opinions, about other things, but let's keep it very simple, and let's assume that we have only binary decisions. And then this homophily tells us that if the people do not share many common opinions, they tend not to like each other. So if one has many different opinions on many different ideas and very few common ideas, they very likely tend to be enemies. On the other hand, if two individuals share the same opinions, they tend to be friends. And this very simple idea has been verified in many cases in sociology and other psychology and also online in social networks. And what we figured out is actually that what one can do is to say that I have this binary opinion, so it's basically something that is called spin. Spin of a particle can be basically understood in the very simple setting as an arrow that goes either up or down. And then, of course, if two particles have many similar arrows, they tend to attract to each other. If they have many different arrows, they tend to repel from each other. And as simple as it is, we use this to model this social group formation. And basically what we assumed, what is the main consideration here, is that if there are two people who are interacting with each other and have different opinions, they rather not to be friends, because then their social stress by discussing these different opinions is increasing. On the other hand, people tend to become friends with people that have the same opinions. And this can be described by a function that in physics is called Hamiltonian, or basically energy function, while we can assign a similar function that describes a social stress. And what a social system tends to do is to minimize this social stress similarly to a physical system that tends to minimize their energy. And we can have different terms for interactions in the group, and a different term for interactions between the group. And there is a term for external field that can be like external media, for example, social networks, etc. And then we did the calculations, and we did both theoretical calculations and simulations. And basically what you see is that there are two main phases. There is an ordered phase where everybody likes to each other and they form one big group. So it's kind of paradise state that we would like to live in. There is the disordered phase where nobody is interacting with each other. So it means that there are no friends and everybody is just an individual. And there is this critical phase where we probably live in, and it's that there are some groups, but some of the people do not share the, let's say, the main opinion, and then basically they repel from the main group, and then the system starts to polarize. And this is exactly the point where a polarization of a society starts to unravel. And we also confirmed this by the numerical simulations. Most importantly, we applied it to real data, and it's a prediction of a group size distribution in an online multiplayer game, Pardus. So this is really an online game that you can play on a website, and it's been And it's basically in space, and you can do various things, and you can interact with other people. And here, this game is basically produced by scientists, and they call it Social Petri Dish. So we can test various hypotheses there and see whether they are true in a real application. And what we did is that we were looking at a group size distribution. So basically, the players interact with each other. And if there is an interaction, there is a link between them. If there is no interaction, there is no link. And what you see is that this is the group size distribution. There is one big group that has almost 1,200 people, and there are some smaller groups that has much less people. And what we did is that we basically fitted the parameters, the very few parameters of the model with the parameters, and we got a very nice fit. And the interesting result is that for this we didn't need any underlying network structure, so we didn't have to know the social network. We only had to know the average degree, which is the average number of friends everybody has, but it's just one number, and this helped us to understand the group size distribution here. So why this is important? There is a whole new field called sociophysics that combines physical methods with applications to sociology. It's important to understand how social phenomena like polarization, fragmentation, etc. Emerge in the society. And this model is very nice because it really gives us some, at least qualitative predictions with just a few parameters, so we don't overfit the data. And it's really simple, and it's probably the way how to understand more general behavior in society. And now at the end, let me thank all the co-authors, Simon Tuan, who is now here, Rudy and Stefan, and thanks the Medical University's Section for Science of Complex Systems, and also Complex Science Hub, also my family. And I'm more than happy to answer your questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much for this inspiring talk and also explanatory talk. Are there questions still?
Thanks for the very interesting presentation. What, in your opinion, are the biggest downfalls, pitfalls, or maybe like blind spots when modeling human behavior with mathematical models?
Of course, humans are not particles, so they don't follow any physical laws. And there were a few attempts on writing a first law of social systems and etc. Unfortunately, it never works like that. So these models are never perfect, and you will never have a definite theory for any social system. They are the people are not rational sometimes. They do not do predictive things, but at least we can understand qualitatively the behavior of some of these, why this all phenomena happen.
If I understand you correctly, this your approach would help to understand better this bubble phenomenon, which
exactly.
We have
exactly
observed recently.
That's one of the big questions of us. To basically understand how of these echo chambers and or fertile mm-hmm. bubbles mm-hmm. Emerge, and why they are so pronounced in certain ages, and why this polarization in society is increasing mm-hmm. ever in time.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Super interesting talk. my question is, you talk about networks and you include them in your studies, but how much do you evaluate these networks? Are you into network measures, or do you don't need that probably because of your model?
So basically the idea of this model is that we take the simplest network approach possible, where you basically count, you don't assume the whole structure of the underlying network. You only assume something that is called degree distribution, which is the number of links each node has. And this is, of course, an approximation, but surprisingly, it works very well for certain systems. And also for this system for this application, it worked pretty well. Of course, in more general situations, you would probably need to make a little bit more complicated approaches where you would introduce some centrality measures and some network structures. But this is also possible if somebody would like to do the next step.
Thank you very much. So maybe I can also ask one question, and that is, so when you now move towards medicine and look at health and disease, could you think of an approach where you can use or apply your method also to evaluate complex networks of healthy and healthy people and patients, maybe?
Definitely. So my colleagues at the center are using network methods to basically distinguish between the patterns in the diseases networks, so to say, because each patient has some comorbidities and some of them are correlated, some of them not. And if you then draw all of these links, they form a network and they have very specific patterns. And what they also look at is how these diseases evolve in time. And this is exactly the emergence of the network, because number of diseases increases typically in time as people get older. So probably this would be an interesting open question for future research, whether we can describe this emergence of links in this disease networks by this model.
And maybe also draw some conclusions and predictions.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Once we have this, we would be able to use it for predictions, but it's definitely a long way.
Mm-hmm. Well, then, if there are no more questions, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, so now we come to the fun part, and that is awarding the prizes. So I would like to ask all the recipients now to come to the stage and get their prizes. So then,
before we have the pleasure to invite you for an informal get-together, which is now in the smaller library part, I would like to take 2 minutes of your time to also make some kind of advertising as a president of this society. We have memberships for students as well. And the good thing is the first year is free. You have access to the traditional library and you have access to more than 2,000 teaching videos and videos from presentations we have collected over the past years. And there are some more benefits which you might like to experience. So we would be happy to get one or two or more new members from the students. So with this, I would like to thank my colleague Harald Sitte from the Alumni Club. And you can be a member of both. I'm an alumna at the Alumni Club, and also I'm here in this society. So please follow us to the library and say prost to our awardees.